The lesson found in John chapter 4 is one that I really enjoy. I like just reading through the chapter. It's a good reminder, I think, in several ways of just different things. We see in this chapter, in John's depiction here of some events that are unfolding, we see in this very simple story Jesus and His humanity. And what I mean by that is we see Jesus in the flesh, and we see that there are certain fleshly needs even that have to be met. And so we see that kind of personal side of Him. And yet even in that, we learn there's some other lessons here too, as He has found opportunity to teach. It's not like He hasn't been doing that. In fact, He has been. There's multitudes that He has been teaching. And yet here is one person that comes up that is just as important as the multitudes. And so I guess one of the things to me that just kind of stands out in this as being just the primary point to walk away with is there's a woman who comes up to Jesus at the well who would seem, perhaps, in our mind to be just not so great a prospect insofar as someone to teach. And yet Jesus takes the time. So there's some things I hope we're going to get out of this as we kind of go through it, and looking forward to your comments as we go through. Let's begin with the text. Let's look at John chapter 4, verse 1. Therefore, when the Lord knew that the Pharisees had heard that Jesus made and baptized more disciples than John, though Jesus himself did not baptize but his disciples, he left Judea and departed again to Galilee. But he needed to go through Samaria. Just setting the stage here. Just setting the stage of what's going on. As we've said, Jesus has already been teaching. It's John the Baptist, of course, who's been out at the Jordan, who has been teaching even prior to Jesus, the kingdom of heaven is at hand, and has been baptizing this baptism of repentance. And as we've seen in some other lessons, there were those already now who are becoming the followers of Jesus. John was the one who was saying there's one much greater than I who is coming. And then Jesus came, and of whom John said, "Behold the Lamb of God," speaking of Jesus. Jesus in this time, of course, as we said, is getting his own following, and as John before too long will not be preaching anymore, the story is going to be focusing more and more just on Jesus. We're kind of in that transition point of the Bible story right now. So let's ask some questions. Why did Jesus leave Judea? I mean, it seems as though this was a fertile area. There was things happening. Why did he leave? Is the Pharisees. Why would that be a concern to the Pharisees? That's right. And here is even, I mean, they may have already been looking at John the Baptist as kind of, oh no, this is a plague. This guy's going to cause us a problem. And now Jesus is baptizing more? That's a bigger problem. Right. At that time. It was coming, and it would come, and there would come a time later in the ministry of Jesus where absolutely he was going to deal with them in a very straightforward way. You hypocrites, and deal with them. But it was a different time. And so now his choice here is he's going to move on. He's going to leave Judea and going to go to Galilee. Oh, timing is everything.
You might want to put something off a little bit.
Sure.
We'll deal with that later.
Yeah. That's right. We have called Jesus the master teacher, and we've learned several lessons from Jesus. Perhaps here is another one. There are times to deal with certain issues, and there's times that you can't deal with that issue. It would be explosive. It's not going to work. It's not to say that you don't deal with the issue. because there was no issue that Jesus did not deal with, but there were times that he waited before he dealt with it. Lessons learned. What else do we see here just in these first few verses? What else? Anything else stand out to you? Always. They would always find something that they thought they could use against Jesus. Of course, more often than not, Jesus would turn that around on them. But it didn't stop them from trying. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. That's right. That's right. We have to learn something from that. Mm-hmm. That's an interesting point, too. Why was he not baptizing? I mean, why would he not be baptizing? And I guess we have to speculate on that a little bit because the text doesn't tell us why. It just says that his disciples were baptizing. Dave? At a later time, this would be an issue that the Apostle Paul would deal with, because there were some who seemed to be pleased that they were baptized by Apollos or by this one or by that one, and Paul would say, "I'm glad I didn't baptize any of you." So he meant he was happy they weren't that he wishes they weren't baptized. No, that's not the point. It turned into they had lost the point or purpose of baptism. It wasn't about who baptizes. They were getting their own little sects among them, you know, who was their favorite preacher, you know, kind of a thing. It's like I think I mentioned to you, like in Africa, we've tried to be very careful about that. I've not baptized anybody in Africa. I've seen a lot of people baptized, but we always just have the local preachers do the baptizing. So there could never be, and by experience, I mean, there have been those in the past who have said, "Well, it was the American preacher who baptized me." You know, that being an issue or problem. And perhaps Jesus is foreseeing, you know, that as an issue.
Jesus being God in flesh, knew that one was going to be at the well.
This is interesting. So he's going, the next point, going to Galilee, why go through Samaria? The text says he needed to go through Samaria. Needed to? There's no other way? And that not really being my point. Do you know what's the relationship between the Jews and the Samaritans? Oh, yeah, they're not friends. I mean, just simply said, they're not friends. You know, it was animosity to a great degree. So much so, even, that often when Jews were traveling from Judea to Galilee, which was above it there, they would often cross over the Jordan River and go up the other side, go around Samaria, and come back into Galilee. Now, is that ugly or what? I mean, that... Maybe it was a safety thing even as well. I mean, this was a bad relationship here. But so I always smile when it says that Jesus was going to Galilee and he needed to go through Samaria. Needed for what reason? He could have gone around. But that's it. That's what Brother Frank is saying here. He knew there was an opportunity here. Yeah. And so that's why he goes. For one woman? There's opportunity. And you know what? That's right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And where it can go. And how it could spread. Sure. That's right. Read a little bit farther here. We're down here at verse 5. So he came to a city of Samaria, which is called Sychar, near the plot of ground that Jacob gave his son Joseph. Now Jacob's well was there, and Jesus, therefore, being wearied from his journey, sat thus by the well. It was about the sixth hour. What stands out in that to you? What do we see about Jesus? Jesus in the flesh felt the same things that we feel. You know, I forget now. I meant to look this up. I think his overall journey was about 30 miles to this point of where he had been coming to this point. And I don't know how long he had been walking. It was just this day. That's a long way to walk in one day. Seems like he probably, because by the 6 hour, that's about noon. That's a long way to walk before noon. You know, it's probably been a multiple day kind of journey. But he comes here to the well about noon. And he's come a long way. He's walked a long way. Sometimes, I'm afraid, we lose track of the fact that when these folks were moving from one place to another, you know, most of the time they were walking to get there. I mean, most of us have not had to worry too much about walking a long ways to get somewhere. We just get in the car and turn the key and turn the air up, you know, and it's not too painful, you know. Though I hear sometimes brethren complaining, you know, well, we drive all the way across town, you know, for worship or something like that. Really, it's that hard? Okay, all right. Let's think about that a little bit, shall we? You know, so Jesus, you know, sits down at the well. Just try to picture this in your mind: the Lamb of God, the Christ, Son of God. He's tired. And he sits down at this well, and I'd presume there at the moment that there was nobody else there with him, because as we read a little farther, his disciples have gone on into town, you know, to get food, to buy food. And so he sits there for a moment by himself. I don't know about you, but I would have to admit that if I'm tired like that and there's a quiet place, I'd like it just to stay quiet. Sandra would tell you, and she's already thinking this, I know, she's thinking he'd probably take a nap. And that's right, that's what I'd do. I mean, I can lay down. If you all be quiet for a while, I'll lay down right here and take a nap. I can do that, you know. And so if we're hiking somewhere, and we've done this a lot, you know, we hike for a long time somewhere, we're up on the mountain somewhere, and there's a big old flat rock right there, and we're going to sit down and take a break for a while, and I just say, y'all just be quiet for a little bit. I'll lay down and take a nap. That's what I would want to do. And I would be hoping nobody came by and woke me up. Just 5 minutes is all I need. I'm not getting the impression that that's what Jesus is thinking. He's wearied, he's tired, he's thirsty. And the silence is broke by this woman coming up, a Samaritan woman coming up. Just try to get that picture there in your mind a little bit. Verse 7. A woman of Samaria came to draw water. And Jesus said to her, "Give me a drink." For his disciples had gone away into the city to buy food. Then the woman of Samaria said to him, "How is it that you, being a Jew, ask a drink from me, a Samaritan woman?" For the Jews have no dealings with the Samaritans. So when this woman walked up, what do you suppose she was thinking? Yeah. Yeah. Don't you wonder a little bit if she even kind of stood back thinking, "I'll wait until he's done," you know, because he was a Jew and he was a man. And just in culture, if she would maybe just kind of stood back just waiting for him to be done, he would go his way and she could draw her water then. And can you imagine there was just silence going on? I mean, she didn't come up and say, hey, how y'all doing? You know, she didn't say anything. I mean, you wouldn't have done that. I mean, a woman wouldn't have said that to a man, even without the Samaritan Jew issue. It just wouldn't have happened. Jesus broke the silence. Someone's got to speak first. Jesus already knew where he was going to go with this. And he was the one that spoke up. We've said this before, and I think we probably all feel the same way. Have there been times where you've been in a situation talking with some people and everybody leaves now and you go and you think, man, I should have said something to them about coming to church or a Bible study or something. You know, it's like opportunities that just kind of go by. It happens. And you get aggravated with yourself. You say, I should have said something. Maybe we need to speak first. Sometimes someone has to break the ice and speak first. And Jesus did. So why did he ask for water? He was thirsty. He'd been walking. He was thirsty. Well, why was she there? She was thirsty. She needed water. And so, I mean, between this Jew and the Samaritan, what all did they have in common? Not much. But they were thirsty. Here's what they had in common. They were both at the well for the same purpose. You know, here was the common ground. She's still surprised that he asked. Yeah. I mean, he's still surprised. Or she is still surprised. She said, how is it that you, being a Jew, would ask water from me, a Samaritan? I mean, think about that for a moment. You know, just what that says and what that tells us. I mean, he could have very well not have said anything to her. You know, and that's right, that's what she would have expected. Yeah.
You know, and it was, you know, we didn't get to the gospel, but it was
conversation at least.
It was something that was common to us all.
Yeah. Sure. Absolutely. And sometimes, yeah, right. You're all there for the same reason. I've thought about this a lot when it comes to, like, you know, a Bible study, and you're trying to figure out where you're going to start a Bible study with someone. You know, sometimes that's hard to know. And because sometimes you don't know where everybody's at on what they think about certain things, and I think there's some things you don't need to start with, you know. And I have just thought many times, find some common ground. And if you're talking with somebody who is a religious person, almost regardless what religion they are, there's something we agree on. And I have found that if you can find that common ground, even if it is just they believe in God, broad term, I understand, but they have a belief in God, you have common ground. You have something to start with. You have something that you can study about for a while, and you can say, wow, we're in agreement on these things. And I kind of like to emphasize that point. Hey, I agree with you on that. Find as much in common as you can find. Because there's probably going to be some things as you go along in other studies that we may not agree on. But let's find some common ground first. And I've thought about that a lot just from this point right here, that Jesus used what they had in common to start the conversation and to go with it from there. Mm-hmm. You have to cultivate some. Yeah.
He's going to open the conversation with something that's common. You go from there and preach the gospel, and that's what the context is.
That's right. That's right. Sometimes you have to cultivate the soil a little bit to help it accept the seed a little bit better. And so, I mean, that's what Jesus was doing. And think how shocking this was to that woman who was there. She just went for water. I mean, she's just going for water. You know, and some have said that going at the noon hour would have been a time when the least amount of people would have been at the well. There may be some reasons why this woman wasn't coming in the morning or in the evening when most came to draw water. We'll get there in a minute. You know, it may have been that she came here at this period of time because she assumed nobody else would be at the well. So she comes and she finds this Jew sitting at the well. What is she to do? And so, you know, let's look a little bit farther here in the story, see what else we can see with this. Jesus is there alone with her, remember. The disciples have gone on into town, you know, to buy food, verse 9. Now the woman of Samaria said to him, "How is it that you, being a Jew, ask a drink from me, a Samaritan woman? For the Jews have no dealings with the Samaritans." Jesus answered and said to her, "If you knew the gift of God, and who it is who says to you, 'Give me a drink,' you would have asked him, and he would have given you living water." The woman said to him, "Sir, you have nothing to draw with, and the well is deep. Where then do you get that living water?" So what Jesus said to him is something that she's just going, she's, her face now is perplexed. Like, what? What are you talking about here? I mean, what Jesus actually has just said to her is that I'm the Son of God. Did she get it? No, she didn't get that at all. But I mean, she that's what she said. You know, if you knew the gift of God, and who it is who says to you, "Give me a drink," you know, he's saying, like, you don't realize who you're talking to. Not in an ugly way or snippy way, but he's just saying, he's trying to make a point here. Some things he's going to go on to say. You know, he would say, "I would give you living water." What does she think about that? Yeah, that's that living water. Living water. You mean, what kind of water is that where I don't have to come and draw anymore? Living water. I mean, what is she thinking? Yeah, that's right. Anything where I don't have to come down here and carry this water, you know, back to the house.
But she's looking at the logical side of this thing. You're telling me you're going to give me water, you don't even have anything to
go. That's right. You don't have a cup. That's right. This doesn't even, he said, "Give me a drink." You know, I assume he doesn't even have anything to drink from. You know, and why? Because, you know, give me a drink. And so, I mean, she's thinking physical. Jesus is thinking spiritual. Different wavelengths here. But you know, almost always when you try to have a conversation with someone and you're trying to get to a spiritual point or a spiritual lesson, almost always, where are they? Physical. They're thinking of physical things. and you're sitting there, you know, at the dentist office or at the car repair place or whatever, trying to have a conversation with someone, trying to figure out how can you get this to a spiritual conversation. That's what Jesus is doing right here. I mean, his first take at this right here, she don't get it. You know, well, what about this living water? How would you give it? You don't even have a cup to get the water in. You know, and so you see the conversation, how it's going, and where Jesus is at and where she is at. What does she think the living water is anyway? Well, what is she thinking when he says, you know, when he says, and he would have given, if you'd asked, I would have given you living water. What is she thinking? Mm-hmm. Probably not. All she can think and know at this point is, you know, it's hard enough coming all the way down here to this well with these empty buckets. You should have to carry them back up. Because it's not the guys who are carrying the buckets, right? It's the women who come to the well and get the water. You know, you're going to get so tired of me talking about Africa, but these things keep coming to my mind. Almost always when you're out in a rural village, once in a while there may be a well close by the village. Most of the time, not. And I've seen women leave with, you know, buckets on their heads that are empty and come back with them full, and sometimes they'll be gone an hour. I don't know where they had to go to get water, but I know it wasn't just around the tree. I mean, they were gone for an hour. You know, and so they had to go a long ways to come back with the water on their head, you know, and those buckets on their head. And it's always, I've never seen a man toting a water bucket. It's always the women that go and get this. And I can only imagine that if you asked the women there in the rural areas in Africa, if you said, you know, what would you think about if we stuck a spigot in the ground over here and water came out? You know, that would be living water to them. I mean, that would just be incredible to them. And anyway, I'm just thinking, maybe that's what this lady is thinking about, you know. I mean, look a little farther here. She had said to, sir, you have nothing to draw with, and the well is deep. Where then do you get that living water? Are you greater than our father Jacob, who gave us the well and drank from it himself, as well as his son and his livestock? And she's kind of asking, like, well, who do you think you are? And I mean, this well has provided water for generations. You think you can do better? I mean, Jacob drank from this well. It's interesting now. It's not like the Samaritans do not know Jewish history, right? Because they were at least a part of Jewish background. And as was said, there were still some of the Samaritans who worshiped Jehovah God, well, along with a lot of other gods, too. But most of them knew something about Jehovah God, and it was Jacob's well, just that whole generational thing. They knew there was something to that, and that well had been there a long time. How can you do better than this? This has watered our people for generations. She's still thinking physical. There's conversation taking place. In some ways, perhaps, the things that Jesus has said has been so pertinent to the moment and to her, she's intrigued by that. She can't help but respond in some way. As living water, you say. You know, what can you do to give us water that's greater than what we have right here? So, interesting story as it unfolds. Jesus answers her back. Verse 13. Jesus answered, said to her, whoever drinks of this water will thirst again. But whoever drinks of the water that I shall give him will never thirst. But the water that I shall give him will come in him, become in him a well of water springing up into everlasting life. And the woman said to him, Sir, give me this water, that I may not thirst nor come here to draw. Does she get it yet? No, not entirely. She's listening. She's listening. Tell me more. Tell me more about this. I don't have to come back here and draw any more water. You know, and so it's interesting to me. It's like she's addressed him already. You know, you're a Jew, okay? Now she says to him, sir. Her view of this Jewish man perhaps is starting to change a little bit. It's been intriguing, you know, to say the least. And so while she is still talking about water here from this well, Jesus has a greater purpose in mind. I mean, he's looking at some other things. You know, he's using what they have in common to continue to build this conversation right here. Verse 16. So Jesus said to her, Go and call your husband and come here. And the woman answered and said, I have no husband. And Jesus said to her, You have said, Well, I have no husband, for you have had five husbands, and the one whom you now have is not your husband. In that you have truly spoken. Uh-oh. What does she think now? Huh? The next verse she says, the woman said to him, Sir, I perceive that you are a prophet. Can you imagine? I mean, how would Jesus have known this? How would any man coming in here into town, coming to the well, would have known the history of this woman? I mean, she knows that. I mean, she's kind of stepping back. Sir, I perceive you are a prophet. It's like, how'd you know that? I mean, this was just a remarkable point. I mean, there's already been the dialogue taking place. They'd already been talking about some things, you know, and she was intrigued about the living water, you know, but now it's like, can you imagine what she is thinking now? Why do you suppose that woman was out there at the well by herself drawing water? Because generally, from what I've read, it seems like, just like in Africa, here again, it'd be hard for me to think of a time where there's one woman going with a bucket to get water. It's always four or five of them. They go together, you know. Why is that woman out there by herself? Why? Yeah, there was something going on here in her personal life that it's not the best situation. And so perhaps, and I don't know, the text doesn't tell us that, but there's got to be some reason she was out there by herself. And she was coming at the noon hour, because usually you drew water in the morning and in the evening. In the cool of the morning and the cool of the evening, you go and you draw. In the evening, you draw water for the morning, you know, kind of a thing. And you use that water up, and you go draw more so you have it during the day. And she's out there at noon by herself. Just seems to me like there's a reason that is that way. And it seems to me as the Lord knows. And so, I mean, I don't know everything about this woman's past. This is all we know about her past. She was married five times before. Well, what happened in those marriages? Did the husbands die? You know, and she married another? I don't know. It could have been that. Had she been put away? I don't know. We can speculate about those things a lot, and it really isn't going to solve anything. But what we do know, that in current time, she's with someone now who is not her husband. And the Lord knows that, as he would know anything all the time. And so now she sees that with him, there's something different about this man. Yeah.
But just because she understood it correctly, it doesn't mean that she had to have the right attitude for it. Because the Pharisees had
mm-hmm. and rejecting him all the while.
Right.
Which shows that their hearts were not right.
Yeah.
But here's a woman who sees a miracle of miraculous knowledge and immediately recognizes the Lord.
That's right. She's going to embrace that. Oh, what a difference. I mean, compared to the Pharisees, you know, who are rejected. I mean, Jesus did some incredible signs in the face of the Pharisees. I mean, just undeniable miracles. And you would think, wouldn't you, that the Pharisees, those who knew the law and the scriptures so well and knew of the signs that would come with the Messiah, you would think that they would be the ones who would take hold of the Christ, of Jesus. But they're the ones, in particular, who reject him. As Jesus would say time and again, it was a heart problem with them. And here is this woman. If there was ever an unlikely prospect, wouldn't you think it's this one? I mean, here is a woman who's, could we say, her personal life is kind of messed up. I mean, it's just messed up. And yet, she's the one who is willing to listen now to the Lord.
Well, she would have probably been embarrassed to reveal that to a stranger.
Oh.
She said, I don't have a husband.
Yeah.
And of course, Jesus could have easily condemned her, you know, because she's
not exactly right.
At least you did say, I don't have a husband.
Yeah. It's a good point.
And, you know, when we're talking with people, if we can find something that they say that's correct, say that's right.
That's right. I agree.
Let's start from there.
I agree. I think that is it. That really is a key point. When we're having studies with people, and even we're finding that there's some things we do not agree with scripturally, when there are points that we do have agreement on, well, we need to take hold of those and look at that common ground that we have on whatever point it may be. You know, I kind of think Jesus is doing this too.
Back and forth, verse 4, it says that you have to go through the temple. I think he needed that refreshing drink at the well. And this sort of, he had taken this journey, he had gone away, he was tired, he was sitting there, he needed to be refreshed. They didn't have a cup. The woman comes, they're still coming. I don't know that he's got a drink of water yet. But I think he's being refreshed as well as she is.
Yeah. Good point.
Because here's somebody now that's listening to
him. Yeah.
Where he's been rejected in his own town.
Was Jesus saying another time to his disciples, I have food of which you do not know? I mean, what is it that just fills Jesus? It's things like this, you know, and opportunities as this. Yeah, that's right. Exactly. Good points. What else? Good thoughts. Don't you love this story? I mean, there's so much, it's so rich. And it's such a simple story. We can easily just kind of read through it and not give any thought at all to some of the, just the happenings of what's going on. And again, trying to get a picture in your mind. As you are learning, I'm sure, I'm pretty simple-minded. You know, I need to have some pictures in my mind to kind of see some things unfold. And I can see this. I mean, I can see Jesus at that well. I can see that woman coming. I can see her going, oh, no, there's somebody already there. You know, and then Jesus speaks up and says something to her, and she goes, huh? I mean, I can just see this unfolding this way. Incredible story. We can learn such practical lessons from this story. And there's more. There's more to it, but our time is gone. And Lord willing, what we'll do then Wednesday night is is take up here around, what did we get to anyway? About verse 18 or 19, somewhere in there. We'll finish out this story here on Wednesday night. Thank you for your comments.